Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esport. I'm your host, Joe Hills, the founder of Looking for Group, and today we have an awesome episode for you, speaking about one of the topics that kind of goes below the radar in the industry. A lot of the media discussion is around kind of the macro stats of the industry, you know, where we're moving, what the major acquisitions have been, but I feel like the legal dynamic around the pro players themselves isn't spoken about enough, so we're going to be focusing on talent management and exploring what the state of player management really is from an agency and from a team perspective, and mining down into what we can do to improve this in the future. I'm joined by my close friend, Matt Adams, who's been in the space for about as long as anyone else. He's been around for the last 13, 15 years, mate?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and Matt's has bounced around between some real household names of the industry, from Azubu to Cloud9 to Overwolf, and recently, alongside his player management and streamer management business, has become the managing director of SICK International. SICK is a international sports and entertainment business, which has been ranked in the top six for the revenues gained by the caliber of elite athletes, coaches, and industry executives that they manage. Mats, thank you very much for jumping onto the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been, I would say, a long time coming. We've been talking about it for a while, so I'm glad to finally get this kicking.
Yeah, we've been bouncing around the idea of kind of what the right angle has been for this episode, and I'm really excited to hear from you about your experience, not just managing players from a team perspective, but also from a consultancy piece as an agency, but also looking at the influencer side as well. But before we get started, would you be able to just tell everyone your story, how you got to where you are now, and your history as a gamer yourself?
Yeah, of course. So I've personally been in the space for roughly 15 years now. It started for me being very much into Counter-Strike Source at the time, actually. I was really bad at the game, like next level bad. And this is why I wanted to focus on the organizational side of things, to still be involved within the industry, an industry that I thought had great potential back then. And I think my story is fairly similar to a lot of other people out there that are still in esports after a while. Over the last 15 years, I've done a variety of things. I've done some marketing for some semi-professional gaming organizations. I used to run Counter-Strike tournaments back on Clanbase, which doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. I also spent a lot of time on IRC back in the day, on QuakeNet, where I, aside from doing support in five languages, I also set up a PR team there where we organized online events with names such as Riot Games, Steel Series, EA Games, etc. Pretty much building out a PR team for outreach. And then throughout the next couple of years, I ended up doing a variety of consultancy gigs. I was at Cloud9 for a while, where I was a team operations manager, where I directly managed the Hearthstone team, but also the other team managers. And then most recently, the last 2 to 3 years, my focus has been on talent management, from a variety point of views as well. But in the last year, it went from representing a streamer to a couple of streamers, to teaming up with a friend to start our own talent agency, fighting the fight for the talent. And then most recently, as you have mentioned, I joined SEG to head up their new esports division. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Thanks for running us through your story, like in terms of the perspective that you've got across a variety of these organizations and in a number of different roles. I mean, you've probably seen the good and bad side of esports over the last few years. But before we get stuck into the talent management piece, let's just spend 1 or 2 minutes on SICK themselves. We've seen some non-endemic organizations step into the space with their own branding and have some potentially unrealistic expectations from what a business in esports might actually be able to do. I mean, the best example that I can see if that is FC Schalke in terms of putting that brand on the line. We've just seen Paris Saint-Germain actually step away from the EULCS due to a lot of the issues and lack of air transparency recently. So what makes SIG's entry into esports any different from those?
Well, I think that personally, it's something that I was very wary about as well before I joined up with them, because I wanted to be sure that they actually have the right approach moving into this. What I think is important at SIG and different is that they've actually really done their research about this, and you can see it's not something that they've just decided from one day to another. I've noticed that in my initial conversations with the company while we were going through the recruitment process, but also at the end, like as soon as I got on board, it's not that they said A and then as soon as I was on board they wanted to do B. One of the main examples, which I think in this case is fairly clear, SIG is mostly known for its football side of the business, mm-hmm. in which they probably have the biggest name, but they've made it very clear from the start, look, while we might have to do something in FIFA for obvious reasons, we realize that FIFA is not considered an esport. And for a agency of that size, especially because of football, to come out with such a statement, to me, that shows a lot that they know that they shouldn't just be pushing their own will onto the esports business, but that they know there's other focuses aside from what they would like to see as well. That aside, it doesn't matter who I am within the company. I will always remain an esports fan, and if there, I will not be afraid of, you know, fighting for what I believe in and what's the right move and how they should approach esports. And I will always advocate for the talent in any situation.
That's a good point. I mean, like quite a few people I've spoken to who have stepped into these non-endemic backed organizations, like Jacob Toft Anderson as well, or Malk, you know, that there is a huge amount of potential for these kind of organizations and these collaborations between people that have lived and breathed esports and those that bring the kind of business and operational structure from outside, and also their relationships with brands. But there is a constant tug of war between managing expectations either way about, is this idea actually going to work in the space? Well, maybe, but we've got to tweak it in a certain way, etc., etc. So super interesting to see what you can get done over there. Let's step away from SIG specifically and let's chat about the state of talent management as a whole. One of the main metrics that I've used for the professionalization of the industry over the last few years that I've mentioned a few times on the podcast before is just looking at the support staff network around the pro players themselves. You've gone from quite a few teams about 3 years ago just being run by an ex-pro or an ex-player, and now we've got a full complement of staff, coaches, sports psychologists, etc., etc. But I still think there's a long way that we can go to improve the state of player rights and the actualization of our player value in the industry. And I think it's quite under-focused on from the media side, like I mentioned already. What are your thoughts on the state of talent management in the industry itself? And what do we do well? And what do we do poorly from a legal perspective?
Well, that's, first of all, that's a very broad question, which you could easily divide into several different factors. But to put it, well, to try to put it in a nutshell, I think that talent management, so throughout the last couple of years, what I'm doing now or am going to do is something that I've been saying that I've been wanting to do for a long while. It's for me, it's pretty much my dream job. But I didn't think that the market was ready for it yet a couple of years ago. So that's why I didn't really step into it sooner. But more recently, you've seen as more companies come in and as the current, let's say, endemic companies, I don't like using that word because anyone who spends money into esports, I consider an endemic company. But those old school brands that are like also investing more money, of course, the prices go up when the non-endemics come in and so on. There's a lot of people. And I don't want to burn any bridges with any companies, but I do represent the talent in most cases, is that there are some deals that are being signed that are undervalued from a talent point of view. And a lot of these people don't really have a marketing or sales background or education.
Sure.
So I think it's important that there are those kind of people that make sure that these people get the true value out of their potential and link up with the right partners. You know, anyone can accept a sponsor deal and get paid for it, but it's about that long-term investment and your personal brand value that needs to go hand in hand. If you sign two sponsor deals this year, with, let's say, an Asus, for example, and next year you go to an MSI, and then the year after you switch again, that doesn't look good on your personal brand. Mm. So I think that aside from protecting people from making the right and signing the right sponsorship deals, they also need to think about where they want to go long term. Like an example that I bring up a lot is, for example, with Twitch streamers, is what are you going to do if all of a sudden Twitch is not the hot new thing anymore? If you just have your Twitch follower base, it will most likely fade away and you have to go do something else. Well, if you keep building on that personal brand value, you might be able to transition into a different kind of sector. It could be sports, or it could be somewhere still in media, you know, if that gaming thing is not an option anymore. And I think that after career development is something that has been touched on by quite a few people and organizations most recently. And I think that that's something to focus on as well, because the lifespan of a professional athlete is not that long. And the options are fairly limited as of now. I mean, they go into a shoutcasting role or a hosting role, or become a game developer in some cases. But I think there's a lot of structure to build around that and plan ahead and make sure that these people also think about that before it happens. I think people should set out goals for them on a short term, on a yearly basis, even for the next decade. Like, where do they want to go? Worst case scenario, best case scenario. And I think there's a lot of different moving parts. There's a lot of infrastructure coming in, and there's a lot of people such as myself over at other talent agencies, which I, by the way, like. I'd love to see more talent agencies coming in. The more people that are being guided and protected from making wrong choices, the better for everyone in this industry. So that's
your two cents on the state of the scene. I mean, there are so many different ways that we could take this, right? Because obviously I opened a pretty broad question.
It's a big question.
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, the overwhelming feedback that you seem to get when you attend the business side of esports with these events or behind the scenes at conferences and everything, like, it seems to be quite a well-known fact that pros and influencers alike don't necessarily spend hours and hours picking through each and every contract that they sign. This is probably going to put you in the corner, because I don't know if anyone really knows the answer to this question, because I think it's an issue within traditional sport too. But in your experience, how have you been able to develop the people that you manage to actually take the commercial side more seriously and not just kind of take things for granted of being in the spotlight for a short amount of time? I mean, we see so many pro players in football, American football, rugby, mixed martial arts, boxing, anything, that don't maximize their potential and fall by the wayside, and then by the time that they're in their late 30s and 40s, they're having to pick up multiple jobs or have like a huge amount of debt. So what are the examples that you've used to kind of bring people over to thinking more of themselves as a brand and as a business?
Yeah, so I think it's something like, and I want to refrain from using too many buzzwords, but I think that education is one that I should mention either way. Mm-hmm. When I started working with one of my streamers about a year ago now, she was a totally different person than she is right now. I think that if you spend time on these people on a day-to-day basis, which is the core of our business, we want to do that day-to-day management, is that you see these people grow even on a weekly towards a monthly basis, and definitely when it comes like a full year. There's a lot that these people can learn, but there's also a lot of things that they do right from the start, else they wouldn't be building an audience, right? But it is quite often that you need to, well, quite often, it depends from influencer to influencer, but sometimes you need to pull them back a bit and be like, look, this is, if you want to focus on this for the long term, then you need to take this more seriously, or you need to get more organized or manage your time better. Things such as fan engagement are, most of the time, they do that right, because else we wouldn't really, I mean, there wouldn't be that relationship between the two of us.
Sure.
But something that I I'm very wary about is that a lot of these people, whether they're players or streamers, they have a lot of passion, but sometimes it's also a bit too much. Like they don't know where to stop. If someone streams 7 days a week for 10 hours a day, that is just not healthy.
Yeah.
Especially not in the long term, because people will burn out. And no matter how often I have this conversation, there's always people that push back and are like, yeah, but I'm really passionate about this. I want to do as much as I can and I will not burn out. I can tell you there's no one that keeps that up for years. You will burn out eventually.
It's the same with the pro players too, right?
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes like people sometimes apologize when they take a day off streaming and they feel bad because they're not there for their fans. But you'd be surprised, like most of these communities totally understand that you cannot be there 7 days a week. And when you take these little steps of taking a day off, it's easier to take the next time take a day off when you don't feel great. And you notice that you put a lot of less pressure on yourself as well, which allows you to do, just be more happy in general and focus on different things that make you more happy. And in the end, quality beats quantity, right? If you can have a more productive stream while dropping two other ones and get more out of it, then that's better for everyone involved anyway. It's not just purely about spending as much time as you can. Passion is great, but you also need to know where to put your limits. Else it's not going to work out in the long run.
I suppose once you have already built up your base audience, I don't know if oversaturation is such a concern within these communities, because obviously people will keep coming back for the intimate connection and engagement that they actually have with these people that are streaming or the pro players themselves. So it's a really interesting side of the space, which I think plugs so crucially into the rising attention from non-endemic brands into the industry. The more it's quite easy to speak about, why esports is able to communicate with its audience in a much better way than other entertainment and sport platforms. But at the same time, being able to put that down to a personal level of how to actually implement these people into being part of your proposition, the way to actually get your message out there, I think that's super important. So I assume that we could probably go around in circles speaking about this all day, to be honest.
Probably.
So let's take a step back from the micro and let's go back to the macro. We've seen Overwatch League step forward with a guaranteed base salaries for the pro players. We've seen FaceIt guarantee a percentage of the monies made are going to the pro players. And we've seen Immortals take some really interesting steps forward with regards to protecting the pro players and actually disciplining them in the right way when they step out of line. What step forward in the space in terms of actually protecting player rights and the health of the pro players themselves, do you think needs to be taken for the industry to continue to professionalize? Or are we already starting to see teams and organizations step forward of their own volition to protect these players?
Right. So I think it's again something that kind of looked at from different angles, whether it's a player side or an organization side, or when I mean organization, I mean professional team or someone like FaceIt and so on. It's again a very broad question. But I think that I'd like to bring up the example of Immortals most recently, because I actually, I'm very scarce with my compliments, but I actually have tremendous respect for how Noah Winston dealt with that situation. That rule was put in place to protect the players. But in this case, it was that rare occasion where, it actually backfired, because of said players wanting to, trying to boycott, the two other players that were actually, doing what they should be doing and acting like professionals. When I read about that myself, I'm not going to say I got mad, but I was slightly infuriated. And I'm glad that they figured out a solution. And it's a very unique situation. But I'm glad that it was dealt with in the way that it was dealt with, and see that these players are not getting, having to pay for what two other people within their team did before. So I think, like I said, huge respect towards Immortals and Noah Winston for that. When it comes to Overwatch League, for example, and the minimum salaries, I think that, I don't want to sound skeptical, because it does provide security towards the players in that league. But it also, I see it as something that, you know, you could see this from both ways. I also think it's something that was very much needed to even get interest from people, because it sort of follows a certain basic way of what the LCS has done. Without the added player salaries, the investment would be even bigger into getting interest from teams and players. While I'm of the opinion that right now, there is a lot of, you know, I'm fairly skeptical about the Overwatch League as a whole. Regarding player contracts, I've seen a couple of them. And I'm, let's just say I'm not a fan. I don't want to put my hand in the fire here. But the Overwatch League is still very much developing, and I truly hope that, the people over at Blizzard will take the feedback that they get from the community, from the teams, and from agencies to heart, to make sure that we do actually come to a contract that is good for everyone involved. Because, but bluntly, right now, I think it isn't yet, and it still has a long way to go. So it needs tweaking. But it hasn't started just yet. So I hope that, they'll keep working on that.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, there's so much more progress that can be made on this side, and you would expect with the franchises stepping in that there would be some rocking of the boat in a positive and a negative way for actually, you know, the quality of these player contracts and how they're looked after. One of the things that I've seen from speaking with a few agents and for a few ex-pros, I'm not sure if this is so much the case these days, but perhaps you'll be able to pass comment, is I don't think a lot of player contracts actually involve a clause that is related to the use of their likeness within all content. Mm-hmm. If you think about how much of a staple Reckless is for the Fnatic League of Legends team and how marketable he is and how he's plastered out across all of League of Legends world stuff and has done great interactions with the fans, I'm pretty sure that he's not getting paid for every use of his likeness, which I think is pretty standard in industries that aren't esports specific. Perhaps I'm being naive here, but is that the case across most teams, do you think?
I think it's something that's like, it's fairly divided at the moment. There's quite a few teams out there that actually do own the intellectual property rights to the players. And then there's a few that are, I don't want to say limping behind, because I make it sound like I think that's a good thing. Mm. And I'm a bit on the bench about that, because it has its up and downsides. But I think it's fairly divided right now, but there's a lot of shift going on. And obviously, as more and more people want to control their inventory, whether they're a professional team or a league, or a professional, a different kind of professional organization, people are trying to take more and more control. And I do think it's something that will shift more towards the organizations owning the intellectual property of their players. But it's, you know, it's, I find this a tricky question to reply to. Okay. It's a lot of movement going on there right now.
That's absolutely fine. Next time when you come on, let's get one of the players that you're managing on, and we can speak about their journey through the last few years of actually being a player and how those experiences have changed from perhaps not actually having external representation, and how much improvement has been made by working with yourselves and other agents, and perhaps that will provide some interesting insight too. Mats, we're running against the clock here, sadly, which I end up saying it every episode, because we're trying to keep these things nice and bite-sized for people on their way to work. Sorry. and on the way home. We've got one more question from our recurring segment, which this week is going to be called Time Splitters. Mats, if you could turn back the clock and have any pro-facing role in any esports title, past, present, fantasy, or future, what would it be and why? We've had people say mascots, we've had people say observers, we've had people say team manager for the esports team when Football Manager comes out in our very first episode. What's yours?
Yeah, so something that I've been always very open and passionate about is my time that I spent at Cloud9. It was a fairly brief while that I spent there as a team operations manager for a variety of reasons. But if that would have been able to stay a full-time opportunity, chances are likely I'd still be there. I very much enjoyed being a team operations manager. And whether it's in the past or, you know, like currently I'm on the different side of the table. I don't represent an organization, but I represent the talent towards the organizations. This is a role that for me in the 15 years that I've been involved in this is by far my most favorable experience so far. The overall team operations management dealing with different kind of, you know, cultures and backgrounds, but also different kind of gaming communities. I thought it was an interesting mix to keep things spicy and moving, because no day was the same.
That's a really good answer. I mean, especially nowadays with all the franchises stepping in, you've got some really awesome investment behind a lot of these teams. There's so much that you can be doing behind the scenes by promoting one single brand. And I can definitely share your thoughts whilst being on the agency side myself, is that actually being part of something that's wider has its massive appeals on that side too. So Mats, we have run out of time. So thank you very much for coming on the show. We'll definitely bring you back on with one or two of the players that you've been working with and take a deeper dive into this. I think that this subject is only going to become more and more pressing for everyone to understand. Where can the listeners reach you if they want to get in touch?
If people want to get in touch with me, the easiest way is probably over Twitter. I also have my DMs open, so anyone can just reach out, whether that's for, you know, just some advice on how to deal with certain situations, or if you want to, if you need any help negotiating any contracts or approaching brands, you're more than welcome to reach out to me on Twitter, which is @sorcerer, and we can take it from there.
Awesome. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable podcast. Guys, I have a massive request to ask from you this week, and also moving forward. The podcast is starting to go really well. The engagement per episode is super exciting, but the only way to help us grow even more is by word of mouth and by leaving us a review and a rating on iTunes. So if you could take 1 or 2 minutes just to leap over onto your search bar, look for the Esports Roundtable on iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. If you think my voice is annoying, tell me. If you think that it's great and super sexy, great. But I'd love to hear from all of you, so that we can continue to improve and make this thing as big and as awesome as possible. That's all from us. I'll speak to you soon.